adjust slightly here. Well, it's easy to confuse the prophet Elijah. We had a reading about prophets earlier. The prophet Elijah with the prophet Elisha, especially if there's background noise when you talk about them. But Elijah came first, and Elisha was his sidekick, sort of like Batman and Robin. But also like those two, they started out wearing different costumes. But you always figure, or at least I always figured, that eventually Robin will become the next Batman once the older guy retires, put aside that bright yellow and red outfit, and take on the somber gray and black so that he'll be a less easy target for the bad guys to shoot at. Something similar happens with Elijah and Elisha in the second book of Kings. God has promised that he will not let Elijah die on earth, but will take him up in a whirlwind when the time comes, straight to heaven, somewhere in outer space, near the planet Krypton, maybe. Elijah and Elisha are walking together when that day comes, but now Elijah says that he'll be going on alone. Elijah says he won't be parted from his master, not yet, so they go a little further on. Soon Elijah says that now he's really got to go the rest of the way by himself, but again Elijah sticks by him, stays by his side. That's what sidekicks do. Eventually they reach the River Jordan with no bridge in sight. And so Elijah took his mantle and rolled it up and struck the water, and the water was parted to the one side and to the other, till the two of them could go over on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for you before I am taken from you." And Elisha said, "I pray you, let me inherit a double share of your spirit." And he said, "You've asked a hard thing, yet if you see me as I'm being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you do not see me, it shall not be so." In other words, you'll get your wish. If you see me, you won't. If you don't see me going. And as they still went on and walked and talked, behold, a chariot of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it, and he cried, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. And he saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them in pieces. And he took up the mantle of Elijah that had fallen from him, and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. Then he took the mantle of Elijah that had fallen from him and struck the water, saying, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" And when he had struck the water was parted to the one side and to the other, and Elisha went over. Elisha had prayed to receive a double share of Elijah's spirit along with his mantle. That's something sort of like a cape. So far, it looks like his prayer has been answered. It also looks like these two have found themselves quite a power religion to practice. Would you like to find one too? Well, first, let's sing, and then I'll see what I can do. That's hymn number 298, "Wake Now My Senses," number 298. That's a beautiful hymn. I enjoy it so much because, you know, it involves this sort of almost a prayerful idea that you don't just have your compassion, you don't just have your reason, you sort of have to ask for it, even if you're asking yourself for it. That little bit of extra intention kind of brings it to life, rather than just assuming it's always there like an, I don't know, an idling engine or something. Plus, boy, that's another one of the ones that shows you really can sing. Unitarians can sing. Well, my parents weren't too concerned when I came home one day and said that I wanted to marry my new friend Bruce. It was 1960 in Illinois, not Washington State in 2012, and nobody was talking about those things yet. Plus, I was not quite 7 years old, and they could be pretty certain that I wasn't talking about those things at all. What I meant was that I thought that Bruce was pretty wonderful. My best friend Kevin from across the street had moved away in the summer, and now I was only wishing that Bruce would stay in my life. People forget sometimes how wrenching it is for kids when you pick up and move, how wrenching it is for their friends. Well, Bruce was new in town, new in my school, and I'd never met anyone like him. We'd gone over to his house to play one second grade afternoon, and we found that we had a lot to talk about. We liked dinosaurs, robots, Superman, Batman, Robin too. We wanted to travel in outer space someday. We liked our teacher. We shared a crush on our teacher, who is young and married and very pretty, unlike most of the elderly Miss So-and-Sos who taught at our school, who had started their careers at a time when they were required to quit teaching once they were married, or else pretend they weren't. Marriage equality has been a long struggle for a lot of people in our country. Well, we liked the same kids in our class and hated the same playground bullies. I told Bruce about what one of those big jerks had done to me the last year, and he said, "Boy, that guy better not try it with me." I asked him what he would do, thinking he might know some good fighting tricks. And he said, "I'm a PK. I'll pray him to death." I didn't know what a PK was, so he told me that it means preacher's kid. I thought of ministers as sort of like those uptight old misses at school. It hadn't occurred to me that they had kids, but here I was talking to one. Maybe he did have special powers. Can you really pray someone to death? Based on what his dad had taught him, he was pretty sure that you could. It was in the Bible. Open that book and you'll find people getting all sorts of power through their sacrifices and their prayers. Like when Elisha took Elijah's mantle and found that now he too could use it to make God part the waters of the River Jordan. What else will he be able to do? He finds out when he visits the city of Jericho. As Metropolis is to Superman and Gotham City is to Batman, so Jericho is to Elisha. He learns that while everything may look okay, there's trouble bubbling all around. Right here in River City. The men of the city said to Elisha, "Behold, the situation of this city is pleasant, as my Lord sees, but the water is bad. And the land is unfruitful." Elisha said, "Bring me a new bowl and put salt in it." So they brought it to him. Then he went to the spring of water and threw salt in it and said, "Thus says the Lord, I have made this water wholesome. Henceforth, neither death nor miscarriage shall come from it." So the water has been wholesome to this day, according to the word which Elisha spoke. Take a double dose of Elijah's spirit, plus his costume, add a bowl and some salt, and voila, Elisha has received the power to prevent miscarriage and even death. What else will Elisha's power religion enable him to do? We'll hear about that now as he's leaving Jericho. He went up from there to Bethel. And while he was going up on the way, some small boys came out of the city and jeered at him, saying, "Go up, you bald head! Go up, baldy!" And he turned around, and when he saw them, he cursed them in the name of the Lord, and two she-bears came out of the woods and mangled 42 of the boys. We don't know how many might have escaped to tell their parents. Neither do we know what they meant by yelling, "Go up," at poor bald Elisha, living many centuries before Rogaine was available. If you know your comic book heroes, you know that it's super villains who are usually bald, right? Brainiac, Lex Luthor. Superheroes all or almost all have great hair. But it's Elisha who now wears Elijah's mantle of power. Maybe the boys have been teasing him to see if he could fly like his master and go up either by whirlwind or in a chariot of fire. My son, my very own PK, teases me about hair loss all the time, but I found the best way to scare him is to bend down until the glare from my balding head dazzles his eyes. And I point to it and I say, this is your future. He starts to argue genetics and about baldness coming through the mother's line, but I can tell he's shaken. And I'm glad. Still, I think that Elijah's reaction to the boys was a bit extreme, don't you? But clearly, his religious practice has bestowed the power to heal or destroy according to his needs at the moment. Maybe you really can pray someone to death. Maybe God can even help you fly. Or maybe you can learn to do it yourself through your own religious power. Years ago, a friend of mine from California flew out to see me in Illinois, and the two of us drove to Iowa to attend a blacksmithing workshop. He flew in an airplane, of course, even though he was from California. I'll explain. The workshop was in the town of Fairfield, home of what had once been Parsons College, an old Presbyterian school. It had recently been purchased by one of the Beach Boys of 1960s California fame and donated to his guru, the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was still going strong enough in the 90s to convert it into Maharishi International University. This was a farm town with three Thai restaurants. That doesn't impress you anymore, I guess. But his movement had been losing altitude lately, so either he or his followers began to introduce what they called flying into the curriculum. Could they really fly? There are videos of people popping up a few inches from a mat, but some former students have come forward to debunk this as nothing more than a sort of a cross-legged hop. And no one yet has learned how to go up to the sky like the boys wanted to see Elisha do. My friend and I got into a conversation with a local farmer about his new neighbors here in Fairfield. He took off his hat and chuckled, "They think they can fly." And just then a bird whisked by overhead, and my friend Jay said, "There goes one now." But there are sides to this quest for religious power that really aren't so funny. I attended a Buddhist retreat once at a camp in the Sierra Mountains. It was supposed to be led by Lama Thubten Yeshe, the search for whose reincarnated form was dramatized in the film Little Buddha. It was really controlled by several American disciples who'd attached themselves to him like lampreys and who seemed to have some, what would we say, sharing issues with their lama. They also had issues with food. Each day, there was less and less to eat at meals. One of my cabinet mates was a physician who remarked that his fingernails had stopped growing. Several of us were starting to have our own issues with that inner circle of disciples when suddenly the food reappeared all at once as if by magic. The leaders had planned a big ceremony in honor of the Lama. It involved several hours of chanting his praises. Then at the end, we were rewarded with lavish trays of cookies and other treats made from the ingredients that had gone missing from our meals. I wondered about what message the small children who'd come with their parents to the retreat were getting from all this. After days of feeling starved and weak, you praise the holy leader, and then you get big treats? Would you have some issues with that? But there was something else that was even more telling. Some parents had brought a TV and a VCR that they set up one afternoon. Superman, starring Christopher Reeve, who was a UU, by the way, had just come out on video. Most of us needed a break from meditation, so many adults joined the kids, even those Lama lampreys from the inner circle who were usually sort of stuck in the vicinity of our bald teacher. When the movie was over, a conversation started about what you might want if you could have anything you wished for. Would you want powers like Superman? What power would you want? One man said, "Oh me, I'd have to take the big E. The big E? What's that? Enlightenment, of course. Then you could do anything. I remembered the wistful look on his face, framed by his long, thick hair, though it was nowhere as long or thick as mine at the time. This started a series of musings about what kind of powers could be gained by meditating long enough or by finally getting it right. These folks on the retreat were kids themselves. We all are, in a way. Have you ever really stopped imagining what it would be like if you could acquire wonderful powers? What powers would those be? Maybe you'd like to turn to your neighbor and share a power that you'd like to have. Someone next to you or behind you or in front of you. Too much fun now. Having too much fun. I see mostly happy places. I don't see many people who look very, you know, worried about the responsibility that would come with their power. So, would anyone be willing to share their power with the rest of us?
Time travel.
Power to heal.
Healing.
Healing. We are a nice group of people.
Creating more time.
Flying.
Teleportation
from a world-renowned physicist.
Creating a hell of a lot more
time. An amplification.
And we figured out that time flies like arrows, but truth flies like bananas.
Time flies like arrows, but truth flies like bananas?
Fruit
flies like bananas. Alex, you had a great one to share with me.
The ability to reach the top shelf at the grocery store.
Amen.
The first thing I thought was to be able to change people's angry feelings into love.
To change angry feelings into love. What a gentle bunch of nice people you are. Did you want to hear mine?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it would be hard to beat flying. It really would be. I'd have to pick a posture to fly in, though. In dreams, for me, it's usually been the breaststroke. Ever since I was about 5, it's not been the Superman thing, it's been the breaststroke. Going like that. Seems like you got to do something to make it happen, and just going like this doesn't quite cut it. But where would such religious powers come from? Would they be biochemical reactions, or a higher physics dance of subatomic particles? How about those llama lampreys up in the Sierras? Would they suck the power they craved from him, from the llama, from the Buddha, from deep in their own minds? Did the Iowa meditators think the power to fly was in their bodies, or would it come from one of the Hindu gods? Elisha got his power from Elijah, who got it first from the God of Israel. Does most religion really just boil down to an advertisement for ways to tap God's power to use for our own purposes? Now, most people know the drill. They would say it's just the opposite, but hey, we all know what to say. I just want God to work his will through me. If my will is also served along the way, that's just part of his mysterious plan. I don't want to make God do stuff for me by using my magic clothes or my magic words. But for believer and unbeliever alike, most discussions of God seem to turn on the notion of absolute knowledge and absolute power. But why should this be the only way to explore the concept, whether we accept it or not? Could God simply be the ground of being, the still, silent core of all that is, with no agenda for particular persons or nations? Or if it's not still, but rather it's something that moves, could it possibly act like a guide? Well, when I was a boy, my parents would sometimes take my sister and me to art fairs in Chicago. Sometimes we would see artists who would heat glass rods, some clear and some colored, and then they would spin the hot strands of softened glass into all kinds of shapes. Have you seen that at art fairs? They made boats, flowers, birds. Some insects, including dragonflies. Dragonflies. I meant to have one on the cover of the Order of Service. Beautiful things. So fragile. So fragile. But these glass ones were even more fragile than their living counterparts. Maybe whatever lives at the core of all being is more like a glass dragonfly than a hero king with a staff or a hammer. Maybe the heart of all things is so fragile, so vulnerable that it retreats from our touch or even from our attention and awareness. Maybe that's how it guides us. We reach like children for a living glass dragonfly, but even small hands are too rough and clumsy for this kind of delicacy. The dragonfly withdraws, and we're drawn onward, trying to catch it. I suppose there is a kind of power here, but I wouldn't call it force. Now, what is the proper place of power in religion? What religious power is worth having or worth trying to cultivate? Ours is a very rational and non-supernatural religious movement, so you would hardly expect us to dwell on things like that. We don't have scriptures of our own. We're content to borrow everybody else's, to mix and match as the Spirit moves us, ready and willing to add a large grain of salt whenever necessary. But we do have a set of principles and purposes and a well of sources to draw from. What, if anything, do they have to say about power? Have you ever noticed when you look at those words on the back of the Order of Service? How about words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming, here it comes again, power, the transforming power of love. Powers and structures of evil. What are those? I think they must include things like slavery, racism, homophobia, gender bias, economic injustice, and empire. Can any of these be transformed by love? Have they ever been transformed by anything else? I am sure that people like Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, and Martin Luther King, and please remember that not all such people are famous or even recognized by others, at times they do feel hatred for the evil structures that they witness against. But they reach beyond such feelings to make contact with the living souls who maintain them, or who provide tacit support in silence They reached to that glass dragonfly. King became minister to the whole country. Minister to the whole country, even to his cruelest white opponents. They could reject what preacher said, but still he was their preacher, our preacher, who talked about a lot more than just having a dream. He gave a lot more than just that one speech. Gandhi became guru to the stiff British lords who'd never heard that word and never once in their adult lives tried to sit cross-legged on a yoga mat. If they ever tried, they were hoping not to fly, but praying they'd be able to stand up again. Clara Barton, the Universalist founder of the Red Cross, was a soldier for the Union, yes, but a healer for everyone, no matter what costume they wore, blue or gray. And we remember that other fighter healer, Nelson Mandela, leading us higher up the mountain that our whole species needs to climb before our souls leap free. Elisha took Elijah's uniform, his mantle, used it to part the water, and then walked through the gap. Walked through the gap. I wonder if real religious power is always found in the gap, in the interval, the space that's in between. It's the gap between us that invites us to talk. It's the space between that makes us want to sing. What is love, if not a crossing of gaps, a flying over of barriers? Who owns the sky? Who owns the gap? Who owns love? Maybe true religious power is something that we can never own, not a double share or even a single one to call our personal property. Maybe a share can only be shared, and the power we share is the only power we have. The power we share is the only power we have. And might the power of love be the only power that lets us fly around the world like an electron orbiting a nucleus, maybe. I don't know if I'm describing that right. I see the electron as being everywhere. You know, we call it a shell, but it's also a flight, right? Touching every life that lives between here and here. So may it be. Come fly with me.